I was in a very famous TV show. And the title, Bojack.
Bojack!
Horseman Project, this is the intro.
Hello and welcome to Untitled BoJack Horseman Project. This is unsurprisingly a BoJack Horseman podcast. My name is Matt Waters. I'm joined by my co-host and will be for this whole mini-series by Ben Phillips. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I got to watch one of my favourite shows of the 2010s in like a fairly contracted period of time. So I'm actually feeling very happy.
Did you watch like the entire show start to finish and you're just gonna remember all for the next?
I've only done season one so far.
Yes. So that is the way it will work. You know, in a world where we had the staying power, we'd maybe do one episode per episode, but we are doing one season per episode, I'm afraid. So yes, we will just today in this inaugural episode be discussing season one. The shakily received season one, likely because they only put early ones out for review, and it takes a few episodes for this one to stick.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually interesting when you read into the behind the scenes on it, where like IndieWire, yeah, IndieWire like put out a statement and said like, we will never ever review a Netflix show now without seeing the full season, and I think it's more a case of, a lot of the time when someone comes to you and says like, oh, this show gets really good by the time you get to the finale, or like, but get to season two and you'll like be really enjoying it. And I remember Alan Sepinwall wrote a piece a couple of years ago about like watching all of Billions and being like, I've watched like three seasons of this show, and in some way I feel like it's Stockholm syndromed me. Like, it's not good television, but like, I enjoy it because I've spent so much time with it.
Yeah, at a certain point, you've invested so many hours, you kind of have to see it through. Otherwise, you're the chump if you quit early, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as what happens with, like, video game psychology, where people get so hyped about a game, and so when the reviews start coming out, they're like, no, I've invested, like, a good chunk of my personality in being excited for this game, and now you're telling me it's bad, it can't be bad, you reviewers are wrong.
The Puddles and Spider-Man are just but, I mean, for as valid as that is, and I remember way back when, finally giving it a chance, because everybody was talking about it, and the first couple of episodes, I was like, yeah, I guess it's a thing. There is an awful lot, right from the start, that is incredibly important for multiple seasons. Like, they get a lot of long-term continuity out of these episodes that a lot of people probably don't remember as well, and they probably don't remember where some of this stuff comes from. Like, a little innocuous thing, like David Boreanaz's house, you know, where they mistake BoJack's house on a Stars tour, and then that follows for years and years and pays off with that joke when, you know, when he gets his fancy new TV show, and they're like, this looks exactly like my house. It's like, oh yeah, the set designer took a tour of David Boreanaz's house, and it's like, that's all from season one. And like, I don't know, I mean, I assume people do remember, but it's like, yeah, you've got all that stuff with like Sarah Lynn and Herb and Charlotte and all yeah, that like, stuff is all Charlotte right was, here.
Charlotte was the one for me where I was like, oh yeah, season one ends with the Charlotte episode. And like, when it didn't happen, I was like, wait, am I like completely misremembering? I think that is like, season two is obviously the show taking a leap. I think the show gets really good by the end of season one, but I think season two is definitely like, the show elevates into, this is one of the best shows on television,
yeah,
and stays there for the rest of the run. Whereas season one, it starts shaky, it establishes an awful lot of what they're going to do. I think they've got that classic, like, we're a new show, we're kind of like establishing our footing, establishing what the characters' voices are going to be. Yeah. When do you think the show kind of like clicks into place? Because
I think on a rewatch, it's more enjoyable faster. But I think for me, if I can cast my mind back to a first run through, I think somewhere around the halfway point, honestly, like either our story is a D story, our A story is a D story, or Say Anything.
Yeah.
I remember the end of the telescope into Horse Majeure being like, whoa. But I do think it is, I think Say Anything, particularly watching that one again this time, I was like, oh, this is like really good.
I think that was, because it's obviously one of those things where you come into the show and you could buy someone being skeptical about, oh, it's an animated TV show with Will Arnett, Alison Brie, and Aaron Paul. They've just kind of picked out three nice, sexy TV names that you can throw out, and then one of them, like, more quietly devastating episodes of season one is Amy Sedaris doing the Say Anything episode.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, I don't know if it's literally once a season, but I feel like once a season we get like a Princess Carolyn episode, and it's always like super fucking sad, and like the name of this podcast comes from just a hauntingly sad thing that happens, and yet here we are making a podcast name out of it. So yeah, I mean, you talk about, you know, the cast and stuff like that. We probably should acknowledge in this first one, like, yeah, so like created by Raphael Bob Waksberg, childhood friend of Lisa Hannawalt, and you know, she is an illustrator, I believe, while they were working on a web thing together. Among her many drawings was like, were like some depressed looking horse men, and he just came up with Bojack the Depressed Talking Horse. He also, like, you know, he moved, as many do, to Hollywood, to Los Angeles, to try and get into the TV business and the movie business. And I think he said something about like staying with a friend at their house on the Hollywood Hills and like looking out at the view and being like, my God, this is lonely. And it's like, are you Todd? Like, are you the Todd to someone else's Bojack? And it does become a show that is very much, I mean, yeah, I don't want to be like, oh, we're complete experts, we're the blank check guys. But like, yeah, I do wonder what people who aren't as like up on the inside practices of Hollywood get out of this by comparison. Because there's so many like, just fucking bullseye, dead eye, like, this is exactly how this all, or you hear this all works, I should say, when I'm actually in Hollywood.
When they get to One Trick Pony, and they're shooting the Fate movie, and, like, halfway through, it becomes, like, a sci-fi epic where they're, like, shooting on a green screen and replacing Naomi Watts with, like, a tennis ball in, like, 2014, and I'm like, I mean, obviously it's cutting at the time, but we're still only, like, 2 years post Avengers at that point, and it's an animated TV show, which is,
and I love Naomi Watts being like, when will Hollywood get sick of writing three-dimensional female characters? Always game for it, all the celebs that they get, perhaps none more so than Jessica Biel when she's gonna show up.
But I do like season one, they kind of like are quite smart to keep it to like relatively TV people, but then as it goes on, they obviously get like bigger and bigger names, and like season two was obviously one that hinges on, hey, look, we have Lisa Kudrow for like most of the season.
Yeah,
but early on, it's definitely like a bunch of guys that you would expect to see on most TV shows, but probably like elevated that slight bit because it's Netflix chucking money out in the early days, where they're just like, yeah, sure, we'll pay the rate for like Stanley Tucci to play a recurring role for the entire length of the show.
Oh man, Stanley Tucci as Herb is fantastic. But yeah, like, so this is Raphael Bob Waksberg's like first thing that he got made, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether or not he's got like, he hung out in writer's rooms, he's like uncredited on like a billion things, but like you go to his IMDb and this is like the first thing. So
yeah,
I it's one of those things where, again, we're going to talk a lot about Netflix over the course of this miniseries.
Including, it's going to get more unpleasant as we go on.
As we go along, including to the fact where, like, very conveniently, the spiritual sister show to BoJack Horseman conveniently gets cancelled by Netflix after one season, the moment after the animation studio for this TV show unionizes.
Yeah.
conveniently. Yeah. But like, obviously, Netflix will not be coming up in bright name, in a good light over the course of this. However, in these early days, especially when you notice it, because I think it is a trend that we're seeing in Netflix, we saw it in Amazon, we're seeing it in the early days now with Apple TV, and hopefully they don't take the trend of the other streamers, where in the early days, they're throwing money at anything to try and get credibility. If these ideas are like floating around, or there's buzzy people and whatnot, let's get them on payroll, give them the ability to make their dream project, to make us seem more like critically a critical darling, essentially. And that's what Netflix did in the early eras with like Orange is the New Black and House of Cards, and obviously this show and the Marvel Netflix things. Like, there's obviously this thing of like, let's appeal to the tastemakers in television more than anything. And then Amazon was the same. Like, hey, we're going to have the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which obviously only just ended, but was still like their first, like, this is our Beacon, we are making critically acclaimed shows. And then you look at what they're doing now, and Netflix is like, yeah, the biggest show that we've got for the year is a remake of an anime. And Amazon is spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on making Lord of the Rings television shows into the most expensive thing of all time. And I feel like neither of them give a shit about, like, a BoJack Horseman could not happen in 2023 world at either Netflix or Amazon, I don't think.
Nope, cancelled after two seasons. Yeah, and so yeah, he pitches his many shows. This is the one he likes the best. Like they it goes through some tweaks. Like Michael Eisner wants BoJack to be a retired racehorse that develops into your like secretariat storyline, stuff like that. Like Mr. Peanut Butter is dramatically different, and they land their cast. And we should probably, you know, talk about our main principal cast of the show. So Will Arnett is BoJack. As you've said to me, like, it is remarkable that, you know, in a world where every time I hear a celebrity do voice acting and just be the fucking worst at it, I just die a little inside. They cast sort of three and a half, like, people who are almost exclusively, like, you know, had done very little, if any, voice work before this, are those people who are like quote unquote taking jobs from voice actors, and they get incredible performances out of all of them. So Will Arnett is BoJack Horseman, and like I feel this launches Will Arnett as not just Job from Arrested Development, but like, hey, this is Will Arnett, you can put him in things kind of thing. And
it is also the era of Netflix is the home of Will Arnett, which because yeah. They obviously do. Obviously, the year before this, they do the rebirth of Arrested Development in 2013. Yeah. He's in the lead of this in 2014, and then I think he's got Flaked coming in 2016, which is, like, another one of his, like, weird Netflix live-action shows. And even then, I think he's got, like, other things on Netflix that he just keeps coming back for. Like, Murderville is Netflix, yes. Isn't it? Yeah,
that's their version of Murder and Successful, and it's, like, half as funny, but still pretty all right. Very good Christmas episode when they get Jason Bateman on there because of, you know, the history there. Yeah, like, the show, it feels dumb to say, but, like, the show doesn't work if he's not excellent, and he really fucking is. Like, he's always had this, you know, hypnotically, like, deep, gravelly voice, like, as Job and everything, and, like, I think I agree that, like, the character of Job, while he's a fucking doofus, there is just, like, this intense, even if he's not aware of it, sadness to that character. I think Arnett really nails that. And, like, I think he's very good at, like, just really lonely, like, sad little men who, like, project all this outward confidence. And, yeah, it really goes in there. And, like, you know, he's playing someone who is infinitely more famous than he is. And he steps up to that. So I don't know if he's, like, observed other actors while working or is just, like, pretending he was a bigger star than he was. But, yeah.
It's funny as well because he's got a similar vibe to H. John Benjamin. And obviously H. John Benjamin is far more of a voice actor. But yeah. It is this thing where, like, he doesn't change his voice. He isn't doing anything really. Even when he's playing other characters in the show, like he's playing, like, BoJack's dad.
He's just had more whiskey and cigarettes.
Yeah. He's not really doing a vocal performance on this. No. But, like, he does manage to just figure out innately in delivery and whatnot how to make this character different to Job. Yeah. And it's a really fascinating thing where, like, I guess it's similar to, like, a Julie Kavner on The Simpsons, where, like, she is not as talented as, or not as talented a kind of, like, a range of voices as a lot of the rest of the cast, but, like, she still can nail the kind of, like, those subtle differences between the two or three characters that she does play.
And, like, Leela on Futurama, like, everyone else in the cast is doing, like, 12 voices, and she's like, I'm turning up, I'm doing Leela, I'm going home. And, like, you know, she was more famous than them, so I get it, but...
But it's still very different to, like, Married with Children, it's still very different to Sons of Anarchy. Yeah, it is a performance, but it is, but it's a different kind of performance that you normally see from professional voice actors.
And I do, like, you know, to backtrack, you mentioned H. John Benjamin, I've always loved that, like, Bob from Bob's Burgers and Archer from Archer, it's the same fucking voice. It's just one is, like, super fucking confident and the other is just, like, a broken man who has many worries. Even though the voice is the same, it's the, like, Minor, it's the pep and the step is the only difference, and
yeah.
It works. Yeah, so Arnett is BoJack, and we will talk much and many about how fucking good Arnett is as BoJack throughout the show. Amy Sedaris is Princess Carolyn, his ever-loving, abused agent slash ex-girlfriend. I didn't really know anything about Amy Sedaris. She was like the name in the cast I didn't know when I started watching it, and now I'm like, oh, that's Princess Carolyn when I see and hear her in other things.
Yeah, she's one of those, like, a consummate professional. I think most well known for Strangers with Candy, which was her like TV show in the late 90s on Comedy Central. She is a prostitute and drug addict who goes back to high school, so she is playing older, but like right. That was created by like Stephen Colbert before he does The Daily Show and before he does The Colbert Report.
Okay.
So like that's probably like the her biggest like film credit, and then I think she just kind of like floats around a bunch of stuff. Like she's on Sex and the City, she does Elf, she's she is just a not quite in the like SNL bracket, like just hanging out and doing a lot of those kind of roles in many many things, but I do think this is probably like her most substantial and long-running thing she's ever done.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, she's, like, the sympathetic, like, oh, but, like, over time, she gets so much of her own pathos and everything. Alison Brie as Diane Nguyen, Vietnamese-American Diane Nguyen, played by incredibly white Alison Brie. Not ideal, but...
They literally just got in under the wire before, like, the entire animated landscape of the American animated shows recast every single one of their characters of color who was voiced by a white voice actor. I think like that literally happens like 2021
yeah.
is when obviously like Big Mouth and The Simpsons and just all
Central
of these shows.
Park and, yeah. I mean, she's good is the problem, but like, yeah, objectively, if you did this again, it probably should have been ideal of it, a Vietnamese American person, but at least an Asian American person.
Yeah. I mean, for a show that is as diverse on screen as it is, it obviously is very, very white in terms of like the big names up until like really quite late into it. I mean, I think Hollycock is like the only person of color who you would even say is like close to being a main cast member by the end.
Yeah. And I guess Diane's, you know, you get Lakeith Stanfield in there as Diane's boyfriend. They get married or. I can't remember.
But yeah, I mean, I do... There is some of it where, like, some of it is quite funny in terms of... Obviously, later on in the season, they cast Naomi Watts to play Diane Nguyen in a movie, which is objectively funny. Yeah. So it's obviously something that they are aware of. It's just you wish they were more aware of it in the casting department.
Although, in the movie they're making, is her last name Nguyen, or have they made the character white to make it more, like... palatable to middle America or whatever.
Who knows? I do remember that obviously Bob Waxberg did a thread when all of the shit was happening with changing the voice actors, and he was like, I think we realized our mistake like a season in and kind of like really regretted not having Alison Brie but casting a white person in that role.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just something they had to roll with afterwards. But I do remember like a very long thoughtful thread from him for obviously being aware of the failings that they had in the show. And it's one of those moments where like I do think he is one of those guys in Hollywood who like is actually genuinely thinking
it's hard to defend it, like, because there's no way back to it where you don't go, oh yeah, it doesn't matter, they can be white. But I think he feels bad in a way that some of these people probably don't. Like, Matt Groening has very famously been like, this is fucking stupid, you should let Hank Azaria play Apu, like. But Matt Groening's quite a crotchety old man, so. Yeah, Alison Brie, obviously, like, coming off Community, I assume...
Mad Men.
And Mad Men, yes. But, I mean, I assume she gets in here and takes this because it's, like, as Community is ending, or, like, just before the final season kind of thing, so, like...
Yeah, I think some of it does feel like, because I feel like a lot of them are looking for projects after their last big thing, like...
Yeah.
Brie and Paul are the two in particular, where it's, like...
Yeah.
Is this something that's a little bit easier, a little bit, like, less like, publicity-wise draining than the previous big thing that we did?
It's a nice little paycheck. You go down the place, you read your lines in a quiet room, you probably don't do a huge amount of press. Easy gig, and then on to the next thing, probably, is the mentality. I mean, maybe I'm being cynical about how actors choose projects, but I do think a lot of people that do animation think it is like a day off kind of thing.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think any of them phone it in, which is actually really, like, really good for this, because this could be that thing where, like, a bunch of Alison Brie and Aaron Paul are coming at it from, our big TV shows have just ended, let's just take a paycheck for this Netflix thing, and it's not really going to be that serious. And instead, both of them, like, Aaron Paul's a producer on the show, jumping heads to Aaron Paul.
I mean, obviously, coming off, you know, fucking Breaking Bad, and arguably struggling to do anything other than this since then, but, you know.
He had two seasons of Westworld.
Sure, but, like, we all collectively just politely ignored Westworld. Yeah, but a pretty big get, I think, like, the trio of Arnett, Brie, and Paul, like, no disrespect to Amy Sedaris and Paul F. Tompkins, but, like, these are your three names. You're like, oh, they're in it, kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think he is also, like, the big draw, because he is obviously the last build on the show. Again, he got a producer credit on it, and ultimately is the one who, I'm not going to say that they, like, drop the ball on Todd or something, but is the one that, like, definitely doesn't fit into, like, their main plans in the way as the others, where, like, they have to kind of figure out Todd shtick almost in, like, a side partition to the rest of the show.
Yeah, Todd just wanders through life getting into harmless adventures. I think pretty quickly they learn how to thread his stuff back through Bojack's stuff in a, like, surprisingly clever way, whereas at first he's just in a silly little side adventure. And, like, I kind of noticed in the very first episode he's a little bit more with it.
Yeah.
You know? And he will just become this, like, bumbling, slow thinking, but, like, beautiful mind kind of thing. I love whenever he has one of his incredibly long realization trains and comes to the right conclusion every single time, but goes to it through the most tenuous non sequiturs imaginable.
It's just funny to think of, like, season one Todd doing the Henry Fondal arc.
I mean, he does build something near the end, doesn't it? When he's pretending he's... He, like, builds something... Oh, it's the David Boreanaz tour. He builds an animatronic David Boreanaz being like, ah, turn off the lights. And it's like, I can see where this is going. I mean, I don't know if Aaron Paul is Hispanic, but Todd's last name is Chavez, so maybe even more of this, but maybe you can get away with that a little bit more. Todd, Bojack's dim-witted little roommate, and Paul F. Tompkins rounding it out as Mr. Peanut Butter, Bojack's rival, Diane's boyfriend. I'm just going to say up front, I don't really like Mr. Peanut Butter. He does generate comedy, but I kind of empathize with Bojack and want to punch him in the face a lot of the time. So
I think that's what makes the performance so good.
Yeah, yeah.
From Paul F. Tompkins, because, like, you cannot pin an emotional storyline on Mr. Peanut Butter in the same way that you can Bojack or Princess Carolyn or Diane.
They give it a damn good go every now and then, though. And I think he's game for it. But, like, yeah, he lends himself to it the least naturally. And I mean, this predates the nomenclature of, like, golden retriever boyfriend, right? Like, but yeah, here he literally is as one. And I get it from that perspective. Like, he is loyal. He is dumb as a brick. And, like, you know, those two things are the hard swing back and forth all the time. There is a lot of love there, but he's also super fucking annoying. But in a good way.
I do really like where they end up with him and Diane at, like, the later points where they are, like, going through their divorce, but still having, like, lots of chemistry with each other. Yeah. And
okay, so, as I said, this is season one, and we are going to put Ben's chaotic method of podcast preparation to the test of Ben. So if you haven't heard any of our podcasts before, I take tons and tons of notes. I try and watch the stuff as close to when we're recording as possible to keep it in my brain. Ben will be like, ah, fuck it, I'll watch it 3 weeks in advance and just do it off the top of my head.
Oh god.
So we're gonna put this to the test, and Ben is gonna give us an incredibly short synopsis of each episode.
So
episode one, Bojack Horseman, The Bojack Horseman Story, Chapter 1.
Yeah, so BoJack Horseman episode one is basically, but just setting up kind of like all the characters, where it's BoJack is supposed to be writing an autobiography of his life and ends up getting assigned a ghostwriter, Diane. Meanwhile, God, I'm trying to remember what other.
You don't have to go beyond that. Like, yeah. I'm happy with just what BoJack did in that episode. We'll get into anything else funny. Episode two, BoJack hates the troops. Kind of self-explanatory.
This one is BoJack. BoJack steals why does it steal?
We're already getting into contentious territory.
BoJack decides to purchase some food at a supermarket that got called dibs by a Navy SEAL.
Neil McBeal, the Navy SEAL.
Thank you. And then has to defend himself from all manner of accusations against him over the course of several days.
I think so, yeah.
That's basically
it's like Muffin Gate, basically.
Basically the entire plot of the show.
Yes. Episode three, Prickly Muffin.
This one's just basically like we're playing into the fact that BoJack Horseman was the star of Horsing Around and Sarah Lynn has come back, but she is like a riff on Miley Cyrus era, like, I've got out of Disney and now I'm like really, really hot on sexual and all the rest of it. but like, basically, the first, this is really the third episode, the first inklings of like the show getting darker, where the creator of Horsing Around, Herb Gazzaz, has got cancer and BoJack sleeps with a person he's known since he was like 6 years old.
Who like very formatively like looked up to him, life influenced by him, spent many years professionally calling her his daughter, and then yes, bangs her in a massive drug fueled bender. Episode four is called Zoe's and Zelda's.
Four is rock opera. Four is Todd tries to write a rock opera. BoJack gets nervous about like how successful it is getting, so basically hires character actress Margot Martindale to sabotage the rock opera at the last minute.
Another one of those things where it's like, this is right here in these like quote unquote bad first few episodes, a multi-season arc for Margot Martindale playing herself.
I love it because obviously Margot Martindale has only recently, at the time of the show, kind of like popped where she is. She's won the Emmy for Justified. I guess like 3 years before now, but like to stake your claim on like, yeah, people are going to know character actress Margot Martindale, and then to also include at a later point a character actress Anne Dowd who looks similar to Margot Martindale joke is like,
yeah, incredible. And again, like getting into that, like it's very behind the scenes, wink wink, nudge nudge, at how Hollywood works and everything. Number five, Live Fast, Diane Nguyen.
Diane's dad has died, and so they go to Boston to organise the funeral. Meanwhile, Princess Carolyn Todd turned BoJack's into David Boreanaz's house.
Yes. Possibly my least favourite episode in the whole show. I cannot fucking stand Diane's trashy brothers. Episode six. Our A story is a D story.
Well, obviously, this is the one in which BoJack Horseman, of course, drunkenly steals the D from the Hollywood sign, creating probably my favourite recurring joke across the entire series, which is the D gets exploded at the end, and so everyone must refer to Hollywood as Hollywoo for the rest of the show.
Every single mention is Hollywoo, Hollywood News Tonight, you know, reporting live from Hollywoo, etc.
Also, Todd's in prison and has, like, gang...
he does the two dates at the dance thing, yes, but with the fucking neo-Nazis and the Latin kids. Episode 7 is called Say Anything, not to be confused with the movie Say Anything.
Which is probably one of the highlights of the season, which is the Princess Carolyn's agency merges with another agency, and it's basically her succeeding, or like trying to one-up her rival Vanessa Gecko, and then ultimately having it all thrown in her face by BoJack at like the last minute.
Yep. Desperately trying to get BoJack a movie and stuff. Episode 8 is called The Telescope.
BoJack decides to go make amends with Herb Gazzaz, creator of Horsing Around, who has got cancer, and is kind of like a split flashback / BoJack being an absolute trash human in the present day, which culminates in BoJack mistakenly thinking that Diane is coming onto him and kissing her, in the same way that Herb does in the past, thinking that BoJack is also into him.
Mm-hmm. It just occurs to me, at no point, I guess other than the very beginning when it said about the depressed horsemen, have we acknowledged this is a world where like anthropomorphic animal people, and no one ever comments on it. Like Princess Carolyn is a cat, Mr. Peanut Butter is a dog, etc, etc.
It's funny, for a show like this, for they do just enough to make you not think about it. Like, you know, there are things where like when I watch something like Cars or Elemental, they haven't done enough to make me not think about it. So I'm constantly thinking like, Like, wait, why does the world of cars have stairs? Like, they're cars. Like, this makes no fucking sense for them to have stairs. Why do they have a world that is just like the human world, except it's this?
Yeah. Or... But then I love when they turn it around and they have them behave like animals just for a moment. Like, oh, someone's at the door for Mr. Peanut Butter. And, like, one of my favourite line deliveries in the whole show is, like, Alison Brie being like, Mr. Peanut Butter, you're a good boy. Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
I mean, we also need to get into, like, the season 2 chicken episode, which is one of the most, like, yeah, existentially confusing episodes of the entire show.
Yes. Episode 9 is called Horse Majeure.
I watched this one, like, last night. So this one is obviously the debut of the best character on the entire show, Vincent Adultman.
Yes, we'll get to the Vincent Adultman hour later, don't worry.
And that's it. That's the only synopsis you get of that episode, other than, I guess, Bojack tries to stop Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter from getting married, because Diane probably recklessly agreed to get married to Mr. Peanut Butter. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the episode, they have gotten married after planning to do it like a year from then.
Mm-hmm. Episode 10 goes by the name of One Trick Pony.
They are making the story of Mr. Peanut Butter confessing his love to Diane by stealing the D from the Hollywood sign, which is not his story, into a movie starring BoJack Horseman as Mr. Peanut Butter, Naomi Watts as Diane, and Wallace Shawn as BoJack Horseman.
The guy that says indubitably? Yes. And then episode 11 is Downer Ending.
Which is basically... Diane has leaked the book... leaked the first couple of chapters of the book that she's written about BoJack. BoJack goes on like a massive drug fueled bender in like what is actually some like really quite cool animation stuff that goes on in this episode, and it's like a big old, I don't want to call it a vision quest, but like really is kind of like threading a lot of the seeds that are across the season and setting up a lot of the stuff that's going to happen in the future. Before ultimately he like goes to ask Diane if he's a good person.
Yep. And how is that answered in the episode later?
Not at all, but he does win a Golden Globe for a book.
Which is in his hand in every single shot of the fucking episode.
Truly an incredible joke against Huffpar at that point, where he's just like, I don't know if you guys understand, it's not a comedy or a musical, it's also not a book. but yeah, this is basically BoJack. Like, he's decided he finally wants to make the Secretariat show, and they obviously compare BoJack to Secretariat and his suicide at the age of 27. Mm-hmm. And BoJack just trying to make this movie happen because he thinks it's going to fill a hole in his life. BoJack is just a fundamentally miserable person, and nothing will ever fill the hole that is his existence.
Well done. 12 out of 12 for you, Benjamin. We are going to get into... We're not going to, like, literally then drill open these ones and discuss every single one of them one by one. Again, an alternate universe where we could be bothered to do 60 episodes of this show.
I do think this show is dense enough that you could.
You could. You absolutely could. We just don't have it in us. Before we get into the general, like, what works, what doesn't work, favourite bits, themes, pull all that apart. Of those 12, is the one that stands out to you as an obvious favourite?
I am really a sucker for the Princess Carolyn stuff, but I feel like saying it is kind of like the obvious answer.
So, like, if I may... for me, it was Downer Ending with a bullet. Like, absolutely incredible episode of the show. One where I was like, holy shit, what is this show? On this rewatch, I'm like, you know what? Say Anything as like an exercise in script writing is fucking great.
Yeah.
So those would be my two. Like, if you want to claim one, I'll claim the other. I really don't mind, but yeah.
I might go for Say Anything. My other one is obviously the telescope, just because I do like that kind of, like, the way that one comes about. But I do think there is... It's... I think... The telescope works in hindsight because of where Herb Kazaz kind of like ends up by the end of the show in terms of like his importance to BoJack's life, as opposed to that episode being like a big standout because, yeah. But I mean, I think Downer Ending works better for you because it is such a flex of animation at that point in the season. Like,
I think it works. I think the effect has worn off now. You know, not completely, but, you know, not to the point where I'm like, well, that's clearly the best episode. IMDb doesn't agree because IMDb is ruled by fucking weirdos on the internet. But yeah.
Intrigued. What is the top
9.1, I think, is Downer Ending. By far the highest rated of season one, I think. I would imagine, like, the finale or, like, you know, Stupid Piece of Shit and any of those kinds of things are probably the highest.
I mean, it should be the underwater episode, is obviously, like...
That one's going to be fun. But yeah, on this rewatch, yeah, Say Anything. I mean, do we want to reward Say Anything by, like, making that the one we drill into, or do you want to just talk about the whole show?
Let's do Say Anything, because I think I want to make a trend of us, like, because it's weird where I don't think of, like, Princess Carolyn when I think about the show.
No.
In its totality. But I do think she is probably, or her episode each season is probably, like, the best episode of each season in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Which makes it, like, this interesting dichotomy at the heart of the show, where, like, obviously Princess Carolyn is where so much of the parody of, or, like, just the showing a mirror to just how fucking stupid the Hollywood system is. Where The Hollywood system, which is obviously where you get all kinds of shit. Like, there's so many good recurring characters in her orbit as well that are kind of exclusively for her. Like, I love Vanessa Gecko. I love Charlie Witherspoon. I love Lenny Turtletaub. Like,
God, JK, a legend forever. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. She's kind of got her own, you know, Big Mouth obviously span human resources off of it, and, like, I didn't watch a second of it, but, like, you can see a world where Netflix forced them to do a, you know, Princess Carolyn's agency, and you can have all these different celebrities as clients. But yeah, I do like that she does come with her own little orbit, as you say. I think the thing I like most about this one is it does kind of, like I said, like, it cleverly weaves multiple arcs together. Like for it to start with just BoJack is just drunk as a skunk after what went down with the Hollywood thing. And then, like, you know, she's like, please, for the love of God, do some work. Bring in some money to this agency. Sends him off to his bourbon commercial. He then decides he's in love with Princess Carolyn again because he always comes back to her every time his life is... You know, she's the easy option for him. So Todd ends up on the fucking commercial. Todd gets drunk because BoJack switched the bourbon. And then, like, Todd ends up back in the show. Like, it all, yeah, it's just really cleverly done.
And all throughout this, they've got the fantastic running joke of BoJack Horseman has decided to record a bunch of lines from Jerry Maguire for Princess Carolyn.
The human head weighs 8 pounds. So fascinating.
Anyone comes into the room with her, it's just making a random line from it until you get, again, one of the not the best use of this joke of basically, like, the recording going on too long versus, like, what is being recorded. So you end up with this, like, Todd, I can't figure out how to, like, switch off the recording machine, and
I got it. And then he keeps going. And
yeah. It's a joke that they obviously, the most memorable version of it is always the Mr. Peanut Butter version of it, which is basically he keeps making signs and there's always, like,
Mr. Peanut Butter is one word, kind of. Exactly. Peanut Butter is one word. Don't write one word. I also like Arnett's delivery of, you complete me, kind of thing. Just completely destroying it. And I like that in that same, you know, again, like, it's so multi-layered. Like, he just casually throws this out as this psychotic thing he's done because he knows that Jerry Maguire is her favourite movie. And then she ends up, like, sitting down with Cameron Crowe, the Raven. And, like, she has been desperately trying to make... Oh, God. She's been trying to make an Ava Braun movie starring Kate Blanchett, directed by, like... I think they get Zach Braff in the end. No...
Zach Braff is who they want to get, as obviously a joke of, like, no one but Zach Braff has the emotional depth to, like, make this project happen, which is a fantastic subtle dig at someone who hadn't directed a movie in quite a while and was, like, kickstarting at this point in time. And obviously Zach Braff is obviously happy with it because he does appear on the show as himself later on.
Another very good cameo. And then, like, obviously Vanessa Gecko steals the movie and she's like, BoJack, I can't date you and be your agent, so he fires her and hires Vanessa Gecko. And then they're going to, like, drop BoJack unless she can, but then she always ends up feeling sorry for him, so she has to get him a gig by the end of the day. So she sits down with Cameron Crowe and pitches him this ridiculously specific book about, what is it, like, the 80s buying zoos
it's basically a riff on every single movie that Cameron Crowe has ever done, to get him to leave the project so that they can hire someone else who's going to be happy with them hiring BoJack to...
And it's Kate Blanchett's favourite book, so that gets her to leave the Ava Braun movie and do this, and then BoJack will be hired, and then he doesn't even want it because he's been having the events of the telescope sort of in parallel. And that's another thing they play with throughout the show, where, like, you know, you're watching this, and like, BoJack's not in it, but like, he's kind of taking this backseat to Princess Carolyn, and it allows for us to then go the other side of it the next episode. And they'll do this a few times where like a moment in one is picked up in another kind of thing. And they do like a mini version of it with the Sarah Lynn thing. Mm-hmm. The whole intro is Sarah Lynn, and then she rings the door and he's like, now who could that be? And then you cut to like how BoJack and Diane were talking, and then you hear the dear, he's like, I think I will never ever see her again. Ding dong. Now who could that be? And it's like, yeah, good stuff. Yeah, and like, is this the debut of Lenny Turtletaub in...
I think he's shown up like very briefly earlier in the season, but this is obviously like his first big outing. Yeah. As like,
yeah. I really enjoy him and all his little like old Hollywood Jew phrases kind of thing. Like, as I said to blah blah blah, what? Kind of thing. Just constantly name dropping and stuff like that.
I love how the reference he gives as well gets steadily older and all the rest of it as well. So you have like the one where like they start relatively recent, and then he ends up saying like, I'll tell you what I told Buster Keaton. Oh no, I told you what I told Keaton. Buster. Like, rather than Michael Keaton.
And like, that train looks like it's coming right at me. Like the very first movie and stuff like that. Yes, very good. And I guess they're going for the Toots is a very long-lived thing with that.
But they also like get like obviously in One Trick Pony they have the entire joke of him going to get a bagel and then...
yes, and then there was food there the whole time. What if it isn't a movie? What if it's a bi-monthly artisanal snack package? And this is another joke they repeat over and over, where they are bickering about whether biannual means every other month or twice a month. And that one will come back over and over. Well done, Say Anything. As our favourite episode, you get to be talked about in general. In specific. But in general, yeah, like, the first three to five kind of episodes, I think, are a lot weaker. I think it's no coincidence that Waxberg wrote the first three himself. They were on a very tight deadline. Like, Netflix, like, you can make this show if you're ready in, like, August 2014. So he furiously writes the first three, and then they hire a writing staff, and it's like, yeah. Oh, weird how the show gets a bit better.
Yeah, which is obviously also exactly what the writers have just struck for.
Exactly.
Basically, if you're doing a pre-development room, then you get to have this many writers doing stuff, rather than you just basically force someone to write half a season for you before they give them a green light.
Yeah. And then you end up with, like, I think episode one is, like, so, like... It's 100 miles an hour. Like, it's like, let me show how clever I am, have everyone talk really, really fast, squeezing as many jokes as I can. No one's voice has quite landed straight into your, like, typical, like, adult animation tackling a controversial topic. Like, oh, I'm going to take pot shots at, like, America's obsession with the military and stuff like that. And it's like, it's not that those aren't valid points and everything, and, like, BoJack is right, like, you don't just put muffins in the fruit section and say they're yours. It feels a little bit, like, cheap when, like, I've seen this in 100 cartoons kind of thing.
It doesn't have the specificity that the show becomes actually known for later on. And I feel like they get a lot better at knowing what stuff that they are good at tackling. And it's also, I think, it's also in those early days where two of the best things that the show is really good at are things that aren't very common in American animation, which is... a complexity to the writing and to the amount of like actual visual gags that require you to look into the background and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that like The Simpsons and Family Guy and South Park haven't been doing these visual gags, but like they're obviously churned out at a far faster rate than BoJack was. So I feel like there isn't the same level of care put into each individual shot that like some of the BoJack stuff will do, where like, I can't imagine one of those shows doing the joke of Princess Carolyn multiple times this season going for a run, and on either side of her...
banging a mouse and stuff.
She's banging at a mouse, but on either side of her are a cheetah going 90 miles per hour and a sloth who's basically fallen asleep. And, like, to leave it completely uncommented on. It's just a thing that if you are doing the classic Netflix thing of, like, watching on your phone or like watching whilst you're doing something else, you might miss it. But if you are actually a diehard, you can pause the screen and there's so much more rewarding stuff for you. And then on top of it, again, like just the complexity of like Princess Carolyn's like tongue twisters that she gets like progressively better at doing each season. And as you say, like the biannual meaning like twice a year or every 2 years, like the sort of things that you wouldn't normally see from this, or the kind of like long running, more intellectual, in quotation marks, jokes.
It's also always struck me as a bit weird that, like, back-to-back Patton Oswalt appearances where, like, I like Patton Oswalt, but, like, he's got one voice in him, and, like, it's just, like, and, like, to have him playing this, like, Pinky is just always on the verge of, like, if this doesn't go exactly right, I may literally kill myself today, kind of thing. Straight into Neil McBeal, the Navy SEAL, who, like, it's just kind of a, like, quite sad, angry, you know, like, sad little man kind of thing. And it's like, bit weird to not space those out more, but
it does feel like they were going for, like, a let's get a bunch of guys who can voice a load of characters and we'll have them be regulars. Like, yeah. I would not be surprised if you turned around to me and said, actually, Pat was signed on to be a regular and he was going to do one of the, like, minor characters in the Simpsons, like, one of the side actors in the Simpsons where they voice, like, 70 different people and they're, like, just recurring and around and whatnot to kind of, like, give it a bit more star juice.
Yeah.
And that fell through at some point because, obviously, I mean, I think Patton is in, like, most seasons.
Yeah, Pinky, but Pinky's around quite a lot. He probably does a third character somewhere that I've just forgotten, but
He's one of Diane's brothers.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They love to, like, you know, and Paul F. Tompkins is one of them, and yeah, they love that shit.
But yeah, I mean, it does feel in those early days where, like, when you're watching the show that, like, Patton Oswalt was being positioned as, like, this is someone who we've got on our repertoire, and then I feel like I barely think of him in terms of, like, the supporting actors on the show, and I'm more likely to think of, like, Wendy Malick or J.K. Simmons or Margot Martindale or Stanley Tucci or Kristen Schaal. Like,
yeah.
It's just interesting that they do, as you say, like, put Patton so fast up front, and then by the end it's like, I don't even think he gets to be in, like, the finale or anything like that as, like, a hat tip to how far they've come.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Kristen Schaal, like, you know, she's gonna, like, Sarah Lynn is gonna end up being this, like, huge character. And, like, you know, Schaal is everywhere in terms of animation. And, like, I don't think this is, like, the first time, because she so specializes in these kind of, like, whimsical little weirdos. And then, you know, this is obviously, like, having her say just disgusting things all the time.
I think this is vaguely, obviously not early for her, but this is kind of like where I feel like she absolutely explodes. Like, I'm looking at her 2010 in film, where she was in When in Rome, Valentine's Day, Shrek Forever After, Get Into the Greek, Dinner for Schmucks, Going the Distance, and Toy Story 3 in 1 year.
Yeah.
So she has a moment where she is just in absolutely everything. And I'm not sure what it is exactly that's getting her those jobs. Like, is it just everyone in Hollywood is a massive Flight of the Conchords fan? Is it just like The Daily Show or what exactly it is? But obviously, she definitely settles into being a really, really good repertory voice actor at some point. Because obviously, like, Louise in Bob's Burgers is very similar to H. John Benjamin and Will Arnett, where it's like, she's got the one voice, but, like, Louise Belcher and Sarah Lynn are very different characters, ultimately.
Yes. Sarah Lynn famously dates Andrew Garfield. And they kind of have two lanes of characters in the show, where it's like, here's the real person playing a very, like, over-the-top version of themselves, and here's just the absolute worst impression anyone's ever done on purpose, like Beyonce being another one. It's like, you didn't even try. But, like, that kind of, like, makes the joke. Andrew Garfield, who hates Mondays and loves lasagna, and ends up falling through a hole in Halloween in January store that has had its floors removed. I just want to say, I actually think Halloween in January would do weirdly well, like, in a kind of, like, ironic TikTok-y way. Like, oh my god, we're doing Halloween in January.
Which do you prefer, out of interest, in terms of, like, do you prefer when they get someone to do an impression, or do you prefer when they get the real person to do a voice? Because obviously, like, I feel like a lot later on, they create fake celebrities rather than new celebrities.
Courtney Portnoy.
Yeah, like, the reference this year to George Clooney is so weird, knowing that, like, George Clooney's is, like, coming as a recurring reference for the show.
Yeah.
But, like, in some ways, it's, like, really distracting when, like, Yvette Nicole Brown shows up as Beyonce for, like, 2 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think J.K. Simmons as Turtletail and Tucci as Herb, and, like, Olivia Wilde as Charlotte is, but, I mean, that's so much simpler role. They're not really going for anything there, but yeah, I think I generally prefer when it's like a full-on character, if you're going to keep them around. But then if it's a one episode thing, you know, like to have Jessica Biel come in and be insane for 10 minutes and then go away for another season.
I mean, obviously some of it pays off in like, is it season 3 when they get, when they get Daniel Radcliffe?
the quiz on Hollywood show. Celebrities, do they know things? What do they know? Let's find out.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very good. And like playing with his persona and everything. Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, a rough first, you know, 3-4 episodes. As I said, I think Live Fast, Die Annoyed may be my least favorite episode in the whole show.
I mean, but is that, do you like the Boreanaz stuff, or was the
Boreanaz stuff? I like the Boreanaz stuff, yeah, but I can't stand Diane's trashy family, and like...
I think that's more an issue of, I don't think they figure out Diane's role in things until, like... Like later on in the season, where I think they're going for one thing, and then eventually they realise, oh no, she needs to be just as kind of like fucked up as BoJack.
Her role is kind of, I mean, it's kind of a series of straight men versus these absolute insane people, and like she knows best, and she's actually clever and insightful, and is his armchair therapist. But then it's like, you know, she's got her own shit going on, where like, yeah, she quite clearly should not be with Mr. Peanut Butter, let alone marry him, like in a week. Like she even regrets the fucking, you know, like they go through all this thing where like he doesn't know her, and then he quietly proposes and she says yes, and then it turns out he did it for his fucking reality show, and he doesn't give a shit about getting married because he's been married like 4 times or something.
Yeah,
but she just she will irrationally just stubbornly keep going down these paths of not self-destruction, like that's BoJack's thing, but she just, yeah, I think she just kind of is constantly at war with herself and like wanting to defy expectation and then being like, well, what if sometimes expectation is good, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch the ebbs and flows of the kind of the main five over the course of the season, where you look at the way that the billing works and you kind of think that it's going to be, obviously Will Arnett's going to be the big one. Aaron Paul is there as like the, he'll have the B plot every episode and will like be doing some wacky shit off to the side. And ultimately, by the time you get to the end of the show, you realize that like Diane has become arguably like, maybe not quite co-lead, but definitely like number two character for the entire show.
Yeah.
Where I feel like she's carrying a lot more, and like, obviously like Sedaris
she's
is
like, she's kind of like there to like, she's not an antagonist, but she's the one that like speaks truth to BoJack and like sends him on his downward spirals, yeah, but then is also his most trusted confidant.
Yeah, it's just because I noticed that like the last shot of BoJack with another character in the season is him with Diane, and it's such an interesting flip from like where he is at the beginning, where like I feel like I would not be surprised if like the original idea was they were going to have him continually like falling back in bed with like Princess Carolyn, and she was going to be that role. And instead, the smart thing the show does, and one of the great structural conceits of it that's like very subtly in the background, is that like as the show goes on, the characters want less and less to do with BoJack, and they become more and more compartmentalized in a lot of ways.
To escape him and move on from him, and like he's dragging them back and everything.
And she's, even in this first season, she is the one who's kind of like actually kind of gotten to go away. And that becomes a recurring thing in each subsequent season, where like the big Princess Carolyn episode is normally like completely sequestered away from like where the fuck BoJack's doing each season, even if his like brand of toxicity obviously is still infecting her life in a lot of ways. Yeah. And obviously like it gets to a point with Todd where like later on Todd is like, Todd and BoJack barely share the screen at points later on in the show.
I think he does move out.
Yeah, he fully moves out in with a girlfriend and all these different things.
Yeah.
And it is just interesting to watch them realize that BoJack would not be able to keep these people in his life, and the only reason we're still following them is because we're watching a television show fundamentally.
Yeah. I think the big thing in terms of like, you know, if we're drilling down into the dramaturgical material. Finding out what happened with her, I think. Because, like, you just assume he was in a big thing, the big thing ended, he struggled to get a second role, but then we will gradually be drip-fed. No, stuff went down to, like, actively contribute to him not being a star anymore and not having any friends and, like, being completely like on a downward spiral. And like, yeah, I love when you see these flashbacks to when he was perky and young, and like, you know, he's got the like 80s stand-up comedian attire and the sticky up hair and everything, and like he's not very good and Herb is, and then he gets a bit better and like Herb secures a show and he's like, I want BJ Goddamn Horseman. And yeah, as you say, he tries to kiss him. The show is a huge hit. Bojack's really happy, starts to get a little bit more jaded. And then Herb will get George Michael'd, basically, where, you know, oh, I'm gay. Oh, no duh, kind of thing. And Herb asks Bojack to stand beside him because he's like, they'll fire me, but they will not fire you. So, like, if you threaten to walk unless I get to stay, you'll save my job. And then Angelica Houston fucking steamrolls through here and just...
Such a fantastic, like, little piece of casting. Oh, like, yeah. Like, they don't have to go as big as they do for this role. Yeah. I think she's only in two episodes of the entire show, and it really is just...
Her and, like, Angela Bassett as these, like, just fucking ruthless Hollywood, like, producer types. And just her being like, I have, like, five conversations like this per day, and you're going to say this, and this is what's going to happen. And,
like, I love the thing. And, it, again, something that I really do want to highlight is, like, how good the... Because I don't think BoJack recorded in one room, did they? They didn't actually get all these actors together to record at the same time.
No, the bad thing about Netflix stuff is you don't get to see as much. You know, if this was a DVD show, and maybe season one is available or something.
I know that this show has been sold like terrestrial rights. Like, I know it's aired on like Comedy Central and stuff. Like, they have.
You know, I feel like with like Futurama, like I watched the DVD extras, and like I can see the cast in the studio recording, and like I feel most Netflix stuff, that the equivalent of that does not exist. Like, you maybe get a 3-minute YouTube video to help promote it, but
I know some people were joking during the strike when like the One Piece cast were doing like promotion. And every single time they drop a new video, they were going like, oh, look, they've got like another bit of their Stockholm syndrome where they like lock them in a room for a day to record just endless reels of like social stuff because they're just wearing the same clothes in every single one of these videos, which is the most fucking depressing idea. But yeah, like it is sad. I was thinking like when we were talking this at the beginning that like I feel like it is true for a lot of animated shows as well. Even when they have like big names, there's not an awful lot of like promotion in the same way for live action shows. And I would really like to see these actors talk about the show. And instead, a lot of the time, it is the animators and Bob Waxberg and Hanolt kind of like talking about the show more than anything. And because I know that like Arnett and Brie and Tompkins and Sidaris and Paul, they actually do genuinely like the show and care about it. But it definitely didn't have the same promotional trail that other things did. But yeah, like to get the level of performance out of Angelica Houston when they are like her and Will Arnett are saying lines at the same time, and it, like,
she's like predicting his comeback, and she's predicted that, and she's like, no, you're wrong, and this is why you're wrong.
Yeah, and but it feels like a conversation in a way that I do think that you only really get out of those shows where like they put the money in to have everyone come in and record at the same time.
Yeah, or maybe they just had, they both did it where like a surrogate person filled in for the other and they had to match the cadence. It's probably Arnett having to match the rhythm of Houston, but yeah.
I mean, just to date this, like the first clip from the Scott Pilgrim anime dropped like a couple of days ago. And that
it's
really
rough
does,
stuff, man.
Yeah, it really does sound like they just did a bunch of Zoom recordings and had everyone like read their line in like one take. Yeah.
The magic of that group together in a room is just 1,000% absent. This is just cold reads by individuals. And it's really, really depressing. Yes, I had that in mind when we were talking about like, you know, getting these like traditional actors instead of voice actors. And this is what you're going for, is something like this. Also through the Herb stuff is where we meet Charlotte, who, you know, was dating Herb back in the glory days. Obviously they break up. She moves to Maine. She like, you know, hints at like, you know, they've got chemistry, her and BoJack, and she just sort of makes an offhand comment like, you know, would you have made a move on me first? And like, that's probably the end of it for her. And off she goes to live her whole life. And we will meet her again. But this haunts BoJack. And we see in Downer Ending that like, he imagines this whole life with her.
He imagines that he like marries Charlotte and then like has his entire life, like imagines a fictional daughter who he's like helping to raise and all the rest of it, and it's just the most crushing thing where like all he wanted in life was someone to like love him and to create a life, and instead he's just pushed everyone away, and just, that was
Like on that note, like every time we cut to Wendy Malick and Will Arnett, his parents are so devastatingly awful to him all the time. I can't even remember. There was one like particularly bad one where I was like, oh, poor little baby Bojack, where they just lay it on so thick, and they're going to be so good at these, as these characters throughout, and like Wendy Malick in particular is going to get such a great arc and such a notable episode. You know the one. So Bojack didn't defend Herb. Herb got fired. The show got worse. The show got cancelled. Herb develops cancer, as you said, and like, you know, this is the thing haunting him. He knows he should have stood up for him, and he knows he should go and like, you know, make amends and everything. And they, you know, he talks shit to him a bit, but he's shockingly chipper. And it's only when he goes back to say sorry, when he's like, well, I don't forgive you. And then they have a full on fight, and like, yeah, he just absolutely rips into him. And that combined with the drama going on with Diane, and like, you know, he's fallen for Diane, obviously. And I think she is drawn to him in some way, but is like, no, well, no, though. And then, yeah, he completely spirals, and that leads you to downer ending. It leads you to like the awkwardness and the big, you know, Bojack asked in downer ending, like, you know, am I a good person?
That's
your theme of the whole fucking series. It's that, and like Bojack just innocuously says to Diane in one of the episodes, people don't change, Diane, and like that's basically your thesis for the whole fucking show, alongside Diane saying, I don't think we are good or bad, we are just what we do. Yeah, and just it's just going to be a series of conversations like that on Mr. Peanut Butter's roof, with the two of them sitting out on the roof together. It ends in a really nice place with, like, yeah, he's pushed through to get Secretariat finally greenlit. He's way too old for it, but he gets it anyway. Who is it that plays Kelsey Jennings?
Kelsey Jennings is Maria Bamford.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent character. One of the, like, few that, like, will pop up every now and then, and I'm just like, of all the people that have beef with Bojack, you're you have one of the better reasons. We have to talk about Vincent Adultman.
We do have to.
Of my favourite niche types of joke is where one person is the same person, everyone else is completely oblivious, and the same person looks insane because of it. Because Vincent Adultman, as Bojack points out, is clearly three children in a trench coat. Although I think it later turns out it's one child in a series of... Or they even play it in a way where, like, you know what? In this wacky world, maybe this is legit. But
I like that every single time he says it as well. Like, everyone's just like, oh, you just hate him so much. Like, they're not even listening. It's like he's saying, like, this great insult about them.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful work by Alison Brie.
Yeah, it's truly a stupendous thing that, like, just keeps on coming back as well. Obviously, like, season two is... like kind of a bigger chunk of like the actual relationship arc, but like they obviously really enjoyed it, and obviously Alison Brie obviously really enjoyed the like doing the performance, because she's doing the classic like little kid voice, but
she plays like most of the kids in the show, I feel.
But there's just something about Vincent Adultman as a joke which I think is
it's
like...
just such a shoddy costume. Like it's a fucking broom and a mannequin hand and an ill-fitting hat and a child just constantly trying to like stay balanced. And my favorite is whenever they talk about like that body kind of thing.
It's like when the reveal of like what his like swimsuit outfit is going to be, and it's just like a tropical and trench like, coat.
All he wants to do when he gets home from business is watch adult movies or watch R-rated movies.
I went to the stock market today and...
Yeah, I was like, I want to wear jeans, and like, you know, she says how she like wants to live young, and he's like, that's baby stuff. Just, yeah, very, very good. And as I texted you earlier, don't be sad, good horsey kind of thing.
Vincent Adultman is like my one. There are two references that I frequently make to the show. One is Vincent Adultman, and the other one is obviously the end credit song for the show, which is so rudely destroyed by Netflix.
I'm normally like against you on the whole auto-playing and credits skipping, but like a criminal number of people probably haven't heard that song in its entirety, and it's 43 fucking seconds long. Like, yeah. Come on.
It's truly like one of those, and I understand, like there's a lot of, I come from an era where like I used to pirate a lot of television to like watch it at the same time as the US, and none of those shows include the end credits thing, and normally because American TV is structured fucking abhorrently, where the cold open of one show and the credits of the previous show are aired as one block, and there is an advertising segment either side of those two things happening.
Yeah.
So, like, most network TV shows will, like, cut to commercial break, like, almost just before the credits, and then come back exclusively to air the credits and the open of the next show. Like, very, very weird to run a TV show like that. So, there's a lot of TV shows I've never seen the end credits for, realistically. But BoJack Horseman is probably, like, there's so much care to it, and also, like, they really bury deep down, like, some of the guest characters in those credits that you don't even get to see who voiced half of the characters unless you, like, click the watch credits button.
And you have
on
to, like, get to it in time, because they're just desperate to fucking move on. Okay, any other miscellaneous?
There's a couple of, like, obviously, like, early performances for Shook characters who are going to be on the show an awful lot. Obviously, Keith Olbermann as Tom Jumbo Gumbo, who is around for like most of the show, is like their resident newsreader. I think he's really good and really game for like every single time they call on him to read some news stuff out and about. Obviously, in from the second episode, Adam Conover, who is one of Raphael Bob Waxberg's or Lisa. Well, obviously, he's Lisa Holt's fiance boyfriend. Like they're in a relationship, and he obviously his big role is a Ryan Seacrest type, which is just a wonderful joke. Yeah. obviously, he is like most famous for being from College Humor, and obviously was on the like WGA negotiation committee recently, which is like really fun. They're kind of the two big characters who are like really recurring, obviously never get like arcs or storylines or anything, but like are around the entire length of the show that we haven't like pointed out, I guess, at this point.
And early on you got Aisha Tyler as 16er Awkwafina.
My hot take is I think she's probably like of the recurring actors who go across the entire show, arguably like the weakest.
Well, I mean, they do replace her in season three. Yeah,
who do they replace her with?
Danielle Gaither.
I'm trying to think. I really like,
I don't know if it's her when it's the abortion episode, but
right, I do really like Cedric Yarber as obviously Meow Meow Fussy Face.
The day that love is against the law is the day I turn in my back.
One of those ones where I went to look how many episodes that he was in, thinking like he had like two or three every year.
He's around.
He's around, but like he does like three in season one, and then I think he's like one appearance a year after this. So like not as recurrent as like other actors on the show, but definitely one who like when he shows up in later seasons, they normally make a big deal of it. And I do really, really like his performance on the show. I think he is very, very fun.
One of my favorite throwaway lines, pseudo celebrity. Would you say that to Eric McCormick? Perfect. I mean, ouch, but yeah. Oh, can we just acknowledge this show's ringtone game is fantastic.
My ringtone is actually still Diane's ringtone from season two.
Has she got one of the many podcast ones? Oh, she's got the Ira Glass podcast theme in this season.
The season two ringtone for Diane is the serial one, where it's the serial theme song, and then this it's Sarah Koenig. It's Sarah Koenig going like, the story of this is that your phone is ringing. Or like, it's just wonderful. Like, I love it. Yeah. I love it to pieces.
So like, BoJack's got this really funky, like, phone-ass sounding ringtone. Mr. Peanut Butter's got the theme tune to his own show. Diane in season one has the Ira Glass podcast theme. Todd just has dun 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 kind of thing by
Aaron. It's Todd.
Okay. But yeah, all very good. And like you hear BoJack so often, so it was very good that they got that right. Yeah, so that's season one. Yeah, it starts a little bit shaky, it ends super, super fucking strong. And I think on a rewatch, you're kind of on board from like episode three, really. Like the first two are like, but there's enough here, and like, yeah, we will continue with our adventures with BoJack the Talking Depressed Horse next time with season two.
Oh, I do one last thing. I want to bring up before we sign off is the other thing that I really like about the show is whenever they do flashbacks, they have the great...
generic 90s grunge song.
Exactly. And one of my favorite pieces is when they flash back to like 2007 and you're like, oh, there's no way you can parody 2007. And they still somehow manage to like...
Yeah.
Like, I'm really... it's a shame the show doesn't exist. I really want to see like their parody of like 2014.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that's again, it's a show that's only going to get better from here. I don't know which season I would say is my favorite. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's hard for me to say.
I'm trying to think what year I said it was my favorite show on television, because obviously part of me is thinking like, did I
Fish Out of Water and
there's one season where I'm like, this was the best show that aired on television that year. It might be 5. I had it as number one on my show, on my TV show list.
That is I think it's 3 versus 5 maybe, but we'll find that is part of the show. We will find this podcast show even that we will find out which is our favorite. So we will see you next time for season 2. We'll obviously not spend like 20 minutes saying who everyone is, and we'll just get straight into our favorite episodes. Ben will again attempt to reel off, although now you know it's kind of less fun, but
no I will go and I have no notes in front of me. If I could take a photo of it right now, you would see that, like, in
I know I've seen you podcast. It makes me stressed,
and yet I still managed to make the podcast go long.
I know, so you're more natural than me. It's a gift. I need the notes. I wish I had your brain. I do not, but yeah, I thought I'd challenge it. And you may be watching these ones even earlier before we record next time, so
yeah, I've got to fit this in around my London Film Festival viewing, which is gonna be very interesting, because I'm about to hit like 2 weeks where I'm barely gonna sleep. But by the next time we record, I will have seen Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a movie Matthew will never ever watch.
Nope, absolutely never. Unless they break it up into 10 episodes.
They make it into a miniseries.
Yeah. That's always my pitch for long movies. Why isn't this a miniseries? Anyway, thank you for joining us on our first episode of Untitled BoJack Horseman podcast. I have been Matt. He has been Ben. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Matt.
And until next time, suck a dick, dumb shits. There you go. What a sign off.
I was not expecting that.